Good morning. Welcome to Focus. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. This morning at this hour of the show, we'll be looking at some of the financial challenges faced by universities across the country. Now, for students, the big struggle, it's all about increases in tuition. But there are colleges and universities that are also struggling. They're struggling to meet rising costs as both federal and state support for higher education dwindles. We'll try to explore some of the basic issues here, look at what higher education is doing to cope. And our guest with the program is Howard Bunces. He's professor of accounting at Eastern Michigan University. He is an expert on university finances. He is both an attorney and a CPA. He was visiting the campus not too long ago to talk about this very subject, and we were going to have him on the program. And that was a day when we were having some work done on our AM transmitter, and we were going to be off the air for some time that morning. So we had to postpone the program, but we did want to have the conversation, and so he's been good enough to spend some time with us, and he's joining us this morning by telephone. Questions are certainly welcome. I'd like to involve as many people in the program as possible. You can do that in two ways. First of all, you can call the number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line, so if it would be a long-distance call, use that one, and that's 800-222-9455. And if you would like to send us an email, you can send your question or comments by email. That's great. You can do that as well. And the address is will-talk@illinois.edu. So any way you want to do it, that's great. We just ask people to try to be brief so we can keep moving. But, of course, people can call in and they can also send in emails. And Professor Bunces, hello.
Hello. How are you this morning?
I'm good. Thanks. How are you?
Great.
Good. Well, you know, I know that this is something that you spend a lot of time talking about. You've traveled around to various campuses. You were here and have been other places. And I think that one could go anywhere and you could give a talk and you could slap the following title on it. You could say, is there really a financial crisis at University of fill in the blank? You know, wherever you are, and I know you've done this. So if I asked, though, in a larger sort of way, if I asked about higher education in the United States, and I said, is there really a financial crisis in American higher education, what answer would you give?
I would say there is not. I'd say the crisis is one really of priorities. There's not a pure financial crisis. That doesn't mean that at our public universities, state legislators or legislatures around the country, they have not been supporting higher education in the way they should. Having said that, there is really not a financial crisis at our institutions. There's a priority crisis. And what I mean by that is that administrations are spending too much money on administration and not enough money on the core academic mission. And I see that every campus I go to.
And I think I want to make clear, as if it's not all clear already, the kind of perspective that you have, the place you're coming from, is one where you're thinking about quality of education that is delivered, but also talking about things like working conditions for faculty members, and of course that would include salaries.
Obviously that's part of it, but there's a lot more to it. I think tuition is certainly part of it. Tuition increases have likely been larger than they needed to have been due to these bloated administrative costs. So it's much more about working conditions for employees, and that's certainly a lot of it. It's also about the educational experience students get. And for us, the big issue is access. I think the price of higher education has increased so dramatically at our public institutions that we are pricing students and families out of getting a higher education, and that is not appropriate. And I think it's more than just faculty salaries, which are also not where they need to be, as administrative salaries are way too high.
Just to stay for a moment with state support, I'm looking at a map that was published by the folks at the Chronicle of Higher Education, where they are looking at they're trying to show what's happened here with public financing for colleges around the country, and there's a big spread from one place to another. There are places where it's been flat. They're actually in our region. There's one place that they're reporting that funding is actually up, which I don't really quite understand, which is the state of Wisconsin. But if you look at this map and you look around, they say for 2010, 2011, State spending down 4% in Illinois, down 1.9% in Indiana, down 1.9% in Michigan. Even worse in Missouri, down 13.5%, Iowa down 12.5%, Minnesota down 11.7%. And around us, the only place that where it's actually gone up is the state of Wisconsin. Now, I'm assuming that the Chronicle would be right in these kind of figures. How is there some way to account for the tremendous spread here in what's happening with state support?
Yeah, I think two things: levels and changes. Remember, a percentage change is coming off of some level, and you can have states. There are some states like Wyoming, for example, North Dakota, that have seen increases in higher ed. That's somewhat misleading because the level that they were at was so low to begin with, and they're just catching up to other states. So to get a percentage change has to start from somewhere. You have a 3% drop from what number? So a lot of it, we need to look not just at the percentage change in the higher ed appropriation, but also the level. And the level could take various forms. It could be the higher ed appropriation per student. It could be higher ed appropriation per citizen. It could be the higher ed appropriation as a percent of the total state budget. So it's not as simple as just looking at a map and looking at percentage changes over. And a percentage change can be a one-year change, a two-year change, a five-year change, a 10-year change. So there's a lot of variables that go into they're not producing enough in terms of states are reducing higher ed. I think when you look at all of those factors, the ones I just mentioned, most states do not come out well. My state here in Michigan, we're experiencing in the year we're now, 11-12, a 15% drop in the overall higher ed appropriation, which is larger than it's been in other states. And then so let me give you an example. Here in Michigan, we're going to have a 15% drop this year. Next year, the 12-13 year, there's going to be no change at all. It's going to be flat. So you may say, oh, Michigan's doing okay. They're flat. But flat after they reduced it 15% last year. So you got to be careful when you look at these things. There's a lot of factors to consider in terms of percentages and changes. And I try to analyze all of it to give the most complete picture possible.
Well, if you take if we just talk about trends, what can you say if you look at last maybe 10 years, maybe even 20?
I think when you look at the 10-year trends, when you look at just the gross appropriation at the state level and then the per-student appropriation, the trends are not favorable. And I think the reasons, there are certain reasons for this within a state legislature. Higher ed has to compete with other significant obligations of the state. And one of the main ones they have to compete with is health care costs, mostly through the Medicaid program, which is a joint federal state program. And as health care costs have risen and as the federal and state governments have not done enough to keep up, the federal government especially has not done enough to keep up with these increases, a lot of the increases in health care costs have been put on the states. Now, this may seem totally arcane for what we're our discussion here on higher ed, but it's directly relevant because the state legislature, if they look at something, okay, we got Medicaid costs, we got higher ed. Well, the one that usually loses is higher ed. The other one in there that typically, the other two costs that higher ed competes with are transportation and corrections / police costs. And corrections costs are very difficult to cut. The public does not have much of an appetite in any of these states for reducing correction costs and alternative for incarceration. And in terms of transportation, everyone likes good roads and bridges and things of that nature, and the federal government may not have been keeping up their share of the bargain with those costs, and so the states have had to put in. So because of the competition within a state legislature's budget, higher ed is what winds up being reduced. And I think it's short-sighted because I think we prove, and a lot of people prove, that a dollar spent on higher ed has tremendous impact on the long-term, a positive long-term impact on a state. But the thing is, you don't see those benefits until they're down the road. So a state legislature looks at all these expenses and says, okay, I've got I've got transportation costs. Well, that may lead to some extra jobs right now. I've got health care costs. Well, I've got to take care of these sick people right now. Here's higher ed. This will help a lot of our citizens and help employment and help tax revenues. But those benefits are, A, hard to quantify, and B, somewhat in the future. So a state legislator looks at that and says, I think I'll cut higher ed. We think it's been short-sighted, but I think you have to understand the decisions that state legislators have made in context of the other pressures that a budget is facing. And in Illinois, you have a very unique situation. I think in Illinois, worse than most other states, you also have pension costs. Not that other states don't have pension problems with unfunded liabilities of that sort, but Illinois really seems to have a tremendous problem with long-term pension costs for state employees.
In fact, you
throw all these costs into the mix, yeah, and higher ed gets the short end of the stick.
Yeah, in fact, I think as far as our pensions are concerned, we have the worst problem of any state in the country, even worse than California, and that's saying something.
And also, of course, we
have had now in the state a serious budget crisis going for a couple of years. And one of the challenges and problems that this university and other universities have faced is simply that one might ask questions about what the state appropriations are. But in terms of paying the bills and delivering the money, the state has also been behind. And there was one point a couple of years ago when the state of Illinois owed hundreds of millions of dollars to the state universities, money that was promised, but money that was not delivered.
Sure, and there was a $266 million receivable that the University of Illinois system had that was subsequently paid back, but that had a very damaging effect, I think, on the psyche and on the just on the overall atmosphere in terms of the financial situation at the state. But you also got to understand the state and the university are not the same. The university is in much better shape than the state. The university has a much higher bond rating than the state because the university has diverse revenue sources. Less than a quarter of its money comes from the state appropriation, and the university has the ability to overcome declines in the state appropriation and overcome the state delaying the payment in the appropriation. And they've been able to do that. That doesn't mean it's favorable. It doesn't mean it's a positive development. It's not at all. But the university and the state, most people equate the two. Mm-hmm. If I ask people what percent of the budget at UIUC comes from the state of Illinois, most people will say 60, 70, 80%. That used to be the case back in the 1960s and 70s. But that no longer is the case, and now it's less than a quarter.
Yeah. Let me just very quickly, for the benefit of anybody who has just tuned in, I'd like to introduce again the guest. We're talking this morning with Howard Bunces. He is professor of accounting at the University of Eastern Michigan. He is both an attorney and a CPA and does a lot of speaking on the subject of university finances. And he was here recently doing that, and we're having him here on the program to do the same. Questions are welcome. Questions, comments, welcome. 333-9455 and toll-free 800-222-9455. You also may send us an email, will-talk at illinois.edu. You were just getting into the area that I was interested in having you talk a little bit, and that is if you take a look at, if you break down sources of revenue for universities, and so you'll consider their state and federal support, the money that comes in from tuition. I suppose you also have to consider the money that people give to the university for building buildings and funding scholarships and the activities of the university, and whatever the university can manage to do to generate income. And if you look at everything, how that breaks down, has there been a significant change in, you know, how the pieces of that pie get made up? If you look back, you know, 10, 20 years or more.
Absolutely. One piece of the pie you did not mention was grants and contracts. Universities, faculty write a lot of grants. There's a lot of contracts universities do. At UIUC, for example, one quarter of the revenue comes from grants and contracts. Now, to answer your question, right now, the way we have it at UIUC, we basically have four slices of the pie that are each equal. Grants and contracts, tuition, the state, and then we'll just say all other sources. And if you look historically over time, it used to be the case that the state was a much larger share than it is today. If I go back even just to 2005, the state appropriation was larger than tuition, but now that's no longer the case. And what even skews it more is that the state appropriation here at UIUC is broken up into two pieces, one, the operating, and two, payments for fringe benefits. So what happened as the cost for fringe benefits have increased, the subsidy for the state subsidy for operations, that has really suffered over time. And that's why we have, that's why in Illinois you're considering Senate Bill 512, which will have significant changes in the way pension costs are paid for, and there'll certainly be more cost imposed on employees and probably fewer benefits down the road. And that and it's hard to know how that will affect the appropriation. But those lines have turned. It used to be tuition was much less of a factor than the state appropriation. That has turned, and it's turned in almost every single state on every single campus I've been to.
And it seems that, one, certainly just recently now, the message that we get from the administrators here, and I'm sure that it would be the same no matter where you go, is that they would say, no matter, you know, setting aside how we deal with present realities, the reality is that there has been that decline in state support and that we should not ever expect that to turn around. Do you think that that is in fact the case, that state support, you know, whatever state support used to be, it's never going to be that again?
I don't accept that totally, because I don't think we've made the case. I don't think we in higher education, both faculty, students, administrators, I don't think we've made the case publicly about how beneficial a dollar spent in higher education is for the state in the certainly short term, but more prevalently in the long term. And I don't think we've made the case yet. How often have we testified before state legislators? How often have students and faculty and administration gone as a team up to, I mean, to Springfield? How often have they gone together and really presented a unified front to demonstrate to the state legislature the benefits of higher education? I think there's been some of that, I think, and there's certainly lobbying that does happen, but I don't think the case has been fully made. And I understand that the curve has been shifting downward, but I'm hopeful that we can make the case for higher education, especially, of course, for public higher education in the state of Illinois and throughout the country. I think in the near term, you're right. I think in the near term, to expect these things to reverse may be challenging, but things do change. Things do change at the state legislative level, and I'm also hopeful that when the national health care bill fully gets implemented, that this will relieve states of some of their health care costs, which have really been a tremendous burden on state governments. So I'm hopeful that as time goes on, we'll see the health care bill really come into effect and really have a positive effect on state legislative budgets. And I know that's not a very popular view, that to have faith in the health care bill, but I believe it was a tremendous positive step, not only in terms of health care, but in terms of budgets for states, again, down the road. So I think near term, no, I don't see a reversal. I think medium and long term, I think there's a distinct possibility of doing so.
Well, we have a caller here. We'd welcome others into the conversation. 333-9455 is the number here in Champaign-Urbana. Toll free, 800-222-9455. We'll talk with someone in Champaign, and this is line number two. Hello.
Yeah, hi.
Mm-hmm.
No, I agree with you. I was in academe, worked for a private university in the Chicago area. I remember about 20 years ago that when, I don't know, you can say when this trend started in terms of more and more administrators, but we were an urban campus, and it ended up that more and more classrooms were taken. We actually had to go to another building up the street to rent, you know, space to have classes. It was crazy. But they took this, it seems to me, the corporate model of management, you know, when you start calling people vice presidents and presidents and all that kind of thing. And it seemed like back in the day, it was the, you know, the scholars that were head of departments and all that kind of stuff and whatever. So what percentage or, you know, this trend, how much, you know, have they become more and more of a factor? But I'll go off the air and let you discuss whatever there, okay?
All right. Well, you can respond.
Well, to address the caller's point, the corporatization issue is, if you ask me what's causing this, that's exactly what I would point to. And I don't bestow any evil intent on any administrators or any boards of trustee members. I don't think people do things with bad intent. But I think it's where the boards of trustee members come from. I just got a notice in the University of Connecticut system, the governor appoints the trustees, as I think the governor, Governor Quinn gets to do, or whoever the governor is, in Illinois gets to do to the UI system. And I read the bios of the appointees. They all come from corporate America. And Governor Malloy in Connecticut's a Democratic governor. Governor Quinn in Illinois is a Democratic governor. Democrats and Republicans alike, the people they're appointing to boards invariably have a corporate background. And there's nothing wrong with a corporate background. I teach accounting. I certainly understand there's a place corporations, and I think corporations are tremendous and higher and are the main drivers of our economy. But in terms of overseeing and running our universities, it's not the same. You cannot treat a physics department as a profit center and say, let's see if the physics department is making money. It's not that simple. Obviously, you can't run a university with large deficits, but the universities really don't have large deficits. But this kind of corporate model has been imposed upon us by the boards of trustees who are doing what they know. They're applying the principles of the world they come from. And we see it over and over again. And they don't have that much of a connection to the university. They may very well be alumni of the university or the boards they sit on. I would imagine that almost all the trustee members from the UI system are graduates of the UI system, but that really may be their only connection. The only connection for a lot of board members is that they used to be students once, and so they don't have a good understanding of the way a university works, and they don't have an appreciation for the public good that higher education is. And I think that really is the core of a lot of the problem within our universities, as opposed to the other problem we were just discussing, which is the appropriation not being at the level it needs to be at. Mm-hmm. So we have both of those issues that are really the core problems that we see at our public universities.
All right. Well, I thank the caller. Well, let's go to someone else. This is now Urbana, line number one. Hello.
Yes, hi. My question might be a little related to the previous one, but I have a couple of points. The argument from the administrations over the last several years for increases in administrative costs often devolves to the need to satisfy increasing legal requirements and unfunded mandates and issues like that. I wonder if your guest might comment on the relevance of that sort of explanation. And the other issue is that somewhat similarly, with the cuts in funding over the last several years, the administration appears and certainly claims to take a larger proportion of those cuts, and that would seem to be the case as we see them come down from the administration to the department level. And I wonder whether the guest has a comment on the validity of that kind of justification as well. And I'll hang up. Thank you.
All right.
Well, the first question on the legal on the need for more administrators because of the legal requirements, presidents and higher level administrators often say that we need a risk analysis person, we need a vice president for risk assessment, we need a vice president to manage our utility costs. Universities are very large organizations. The University of Illinois, Champaign-Urbana, it's a almost a $2 billion a year operation. So you certainly need administrators to administer a $2 billion a year operation, and there are legal requirements. But I think when you have the growth that's different than the growth of the people teaching, let's never lose sight of what UIUC is supposed to be about, and that's the teaching and research mission. As we've seen an incredible increase in the number of students, we see a decline in full-time faculty and an increase in administrators. And no matter how complex you claim your jobs are, or how complex, or how many unfunded mandates, whatever they may be, there's really not an excuse in an environment where enrollment is increasing to hire fewer faculty and more administrators. And that's what we've seen. In terms of the administrators taking the cut, I think what we see, what we saw at UIUC was a tremendous increase in the number and dollars paid to administrators in 2007, 2008, 2009. And then we saw some reduction from those levels. So to say that the administration has taken more of the cut, in some technical sense, it may be true. But however, we also proved when we looked at the 2011 budget versus the 2012 budget, just looking at all administrative budget and all academic budget, just looking at the change from 11 to 12, the administrative budget went up more than the academic budget from 2011 to 2012. And I can never see an explanation or a justification for those kind of changes. And I do not think there is the kind of examination of administrative costs that there needs to be. It needs to be top to bottom, and it needs to be thorough. And we have not seen that at UIUC, and we have not seen that at most institutions I've been at.
We're talking this morning in this hour focus with Howard Bunces. He's a professor of accounting at University of Eastern Michigan. We're talking about university financial issues, issues at this and other universities. We'll talk some more after a short break. This is Focus.
Programs on WILL are made possible by McKinley Presbyterian Church and Foundation at 5th and John Streets in Champaign, a welcoming and inclusive community living out a progressive approach to faith. McKinley Church's schedule of Christmas season services is available online at mckinley-church.org.
This is Focus, our morning talk program. My name is David Inge, and we're glad to have you listening. We're here weekday mornings from 10 until noon. We have 10 different topics every week. In the second hour, we'll have one more trip to what we've been calling the Deep Archives, a kind of thing we've been doing to mark the fact that this program has been on the air 30 years this year, going back to some of the oldest programs that we have recorded but that are not a part of our website, looking for interesting issues and people to highlight. This time around, for our last time, you'll be hearing from two rather well-known scholars of Christianity, Marcus Borg and Luke Timothy Johnson. These are both programs from the late 90s that do something that we've tried to do on other shows, and that is explore matters of faith, religious faith, why people believe and why it matters that they do. That'll be an hour number two today. Next week, we'll talk about some current issues in education, meaning public education at the elementary secondary level. Our guest will be Mary Kalantzis. She is dean of the College of Education here at University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. Also Monday at 11, we'll do the program we call Talk to the Family Doctor. We do it every other month, always on a Monday, so you will have an opportunity to call in and ask questions about health for yourself, for your family. And our guest is Dr. Jeff Swearingen. He's a family medicine doctor at Carl in Urbana. You can look at the schedule, listen to past programs by going to our website. That is WILL.illinois.edu. In this hour, our guest is Howard Bunces. He is a professor of accounting at the University of Eastern Michigan. He's an expert on university finances. He is both an attorney and a certified public accountant. He was here visiting the campus not very long ago to talk about this very issue. We were planning on having him on the program, and then we had to take some time off the air to do some work on our transmitter, and we did want to have him on, so he was good enough to give us some time this morning. He's talking with us by phone. Questions are welcome. We have somebody else ready to go, so you can call in 333-9455. That's the number for Champaign-Urbana. Toll-free, 800-222-9455. Email is also possible, and that is will-talk@illinois.edu, and I have a couple, and we'll get right to them. First, though, we do have another caller in Piatone on our line 4, toll-free line. Hello.
Hello. Good morning, and real quick, Merry Christmas. I was listening to you, and I got an interesting take on what you were saying, how some of these corporate America type staff or seem to be overtaking some of these universities and other spots. Well, I'm sitting here listening to you. If you find out, if you do the research, a lot of the problems these schools have is that it goes into the, whenever they create a tax hike or a referendum or something, it, the night, most of the money, most of the increase goes into the, back into the compensation packages. And it's not to help the universities other than maybe grow the pocketbooks of some of these professors and teachers. It's not just in the state. It's in the whole country. So I kind of, I know everybody wants to bash corporate America, but, you know, honestly, I think if you look in between the lines, it's a lot more than just corporate America that's causing these problems. And with the universities, it's like what you say, you can't justify this increase, and I can't either, but, it, you know, everybody's got the same, saying the same thing you are, whatever it might be. And I think it's just, everybody wanting to get out and retire early and take their lump sum and, you know, be able to live for 30, 40 years on whatever they're making now. And so they're increasing their wealth. And I find it odd that nobody's even looking at that instead of saying, you know, going after the guy that may have worked in the corporate world. Because we all know that that's just part of it. It's just, you know, I just, to me, I get tired of people picking on corporate America, because for one thing, if corporate America goes away, then that means a loss of jobs. People forget where that the jobs of people that work at Macy's and even there at the school. I'm getting kind of tired of it. You know, it's one of those things. Well, maybe we should regulate it a little bit more. But my honest opinion is I think it's the compensation package that's just bringing everybody down. Thanks. I'll get off to listen.
All right. Well, Professor Bunzus, you want to have some response?
Sure. In terms of compensation, what we were able to see at UIUC was the compensation of the administration, of the top administrators going up. Compensation of the faculty, not so much. There haven't been raises for several years. And if you look at the compensation of faculty at UIUC compared to their peer institution, UIUC is almost at the bottom of the pack, and they've lost significant ground over the last several years. So the compensation increases are not certainly going to the UIUC faculty. Now, in terms of the pension, I do think Senate Bill 512, and I don't know exactly what's going to be passed in Illinois, but I think it's pretty clear that in your state, as we move forward, state employees will be paying much more of their salary, a larger percentage of their salary, towards their pension contributions, and what they receive when they retire will be reduced. I think both of these things are definitively going to happen, and whether we think it's right or not, that's a more difficult question as to whether someone who's worked their whole lives serving the public good, should they get the pensions that have been promised to them now. But I think definitively we're going to see a much more Spartan-like pension system. And plus, most states are trying to move to either a full defined contribution plan or some sort of combination of defined benefit and defined contribution plan for new state employees so that there is no defined benefit at all. In other words, you don't get a certain percentage of your final salary at retirement, but you get whatever is in your retirement account that's been contributed jointly by both employer and employee. So I do think there's a significant movement in your state to address the pension situation. I think, as you pointed out earlier, the pension situation in Illinois is the worst in the country. And I think that's why I don't think anyone would argue that there's going to be a significant change in public pensions in the state of Illinois going forward.
Yeah, and this is just actually we had somebody writing in on email wanting you to comment on the Senate Bill 512, and this is essentially, as I understand it, this is the bill, and we have report on this. This is the bill that would set up this what is referred to as a three-tiered retirement system, where you would have your choice. Either you could, if you want to maintain the benefits that people get now, you would have to pay more. You could pay less, but have a decrease in the benefits, or then you could go into a 401k, and you know, so you take your choice. For people going for people who are coming to the new workers at the university, you would have to take your choice. And so there's, but this did, it's my understanding, this did not get all the way through the House. Next year is an election year. We're not really quite sure what's going to happen with this, but I think, as you say, the expectation is sooner or later something's going to have to happen because of an enormous costs of the pension system that we have now. And, you know, and in the interest of full disclosure, I should say, held up my hand and say, yes, I'm part of this too. I am in the state university retirement system. Everybody who works in this building is in the state university retirement system. So I am not an objective observer on this whole thing.
Well, you shouldn't be, because you've given your service to the state. So, you know, SURS, the state university retirement system, certainly needs to be healthier. And I can tell you what's happened in Michigan in my state. I personally am on 100% defined contribution plan. I've been here 15 years, and when I started, about 2 years before I started here in the mid-90s, they started switching over state employees to 100% defined contribution plan.
Mm-hmm.
The state of Ohio has a very similar plan to yours in Illinois, and they're doing it's not quite cool. They're exactly where you are in Illinois. They don't know exactly how they're going to change it, and there's several bills before the legislature, but I think it is clear in Ohio there's going to be increased contributions, decreased benefits at retirement, and more people, more employees going into a 401k type of plan. I don't see how you can avoid this in Illinois. I don't see, no matter what the politics of it are, I can't imagine that you're going to keep the same pension system you have now. I'm sorry for you and others. I just don't see that happening.
Well, let's take another call here. Champaign County, line number one. Hello.
Yeah, first I wanted to comment on what I found curious about the language of the caller that went on so long was that said the increases aren't going to the university. They're just going to the people that work there. Well, I think the people that work there are the most important part of the university, so I don't understand it. And I think that the only countervailing thing to actually make the university rise to its mission and be less at the demand of corporations is the prospect of a unionization movement, which has been successful at UI Chicago, and the university is trying to pull rabbits out of their hat, and one after another of complaints to the bureau, and I think they've been the last attempt at this kind of bureaucratic impediment has been rejected, and we'll see what they're going to do next. But I really think it's people at the university could go elsewhere and make more money. At some point, some of them are dedicated to actually a mission of the university as a place for higher education and not just fitting cogs into the corporate wheel. So anyway, I don't know how you'll react to that, but I wanted to get that point out there. Thank you.
Sure.
Well, in terms of the cost going to the people, obviously almost 63% or so of total costs at UIUC are personnel. So, and obviously anything that increases or decreases costs is going to have a large effect on personnel. The issue is which personnel. Are we talking about personnel who are teaching our students and doing the research? Are we talking about administration? The other thing I think to consider, though, is if resources are spent more appropriately, they could also be lower tuition. Tuition would not have to go up as much as it does. And so that's not a pure cost. That's a savings to Illinois students and their families. In terms of unionization, I couldn't tell if the caller was pro or con. I can tell you that I firmly believe that all employees should have the right to bargain collectively. And I do believe in higher education that when employees have collective bargaining rights, that they work better with the university, and we do make the university a better place. And I've seen that in many institutions around the country.
We're coming to the point where we have just about 10 minutes, maybe a little bit more, in this part of Focus. Our guest is Howard Bunces. He is a professor of accounting at the University of Eastern Michigan. He's an expert on university finances. That's what we're talking about here this morning. Questions, comments are welcome. 333-9455. Toll-free 800-222-9455. Is it possible for you to say a little something, since the subject of faculty salaries have been raised? Can you say something about what average salaries for a university professor at a public college look like, and what the trends on salaries have been again over the last couple of decades?
Well, it's certainly hard to get a sense of faculty salaries around the country because there's so many differences in mission. There's differences in size and mission and things of that nature. What I can tell you is that when you look at faculty salaries, we always do it by rank, full professor, associate, assistant professor. And at a big public university, a research one university like UIUC, as I look at the, shall we say, 20 schools that are the peer group of UIUC, the average salary of that peer group is roughly, for a full professor, is roughly $154,000. And at UIUC, it's about $20,000 below that amount. And assistant professors are making a lot. Associate and assistant professors are making significantly less than that. In an associate professor at UIUC is making in the low 80s, assistant professor right around 80,000 as well. And around the country, for public universities, those numbers are roughly $10,000 higher than that. For research one universities, for research, where I teach at a regional university, the salaries are, the average salaries are much lower. There's also tremendous variance by discipline in general. But the trend overall, we saw an overall increase of faculty salaries around the country last year of about 1%. The year before that, there was actually no increase at all. And over the last 20 years, it's not, what's more important is not really the salaries themselves, which have not kept up with inflation, have not gone up that much. What's really the trend is the number of full-time faculty has declined. And we've seen it at UIUC, and we've seen it around the country, is the use of temporary and part-time faculty. And these are wonderful people working extremely hard, often working at more than one institution for very little pay. And the trend, the big trend that we've seen is a decline in the number of full-time faculty at Research One institutions and at other institutions as well. And that, I do not think, is a positive trend for the overall education of our students, because we've seen tremendous increases in enrollment over the last 10 to 20 years. And I think a lot of that is people realize, people are starting to see the difference that higher education really can make a difference in your lifetime earnings. And that's why we've seen such an increase in enrollment.
Yeah, well, I got several callers here. We'll try to get everybody in. Next is someone who is in Champaign, and this is line one. Hello.
There's a tendency to go to interdisciplinary studies and teamwork. Can you say something about the cost of that? It seems to me that it's more costly to handle teams and interdisciplinary studies. Do you have some bead on that relative cost?
Well, I can tell you at UIUC, there is a strong trend towards hiring faculty, and as you say, as this call says, interdisciplinary studies. I think the rationale behind it is that we want to, the administration wants what they use this word all the time, flexibility, so that if there's not a lot of enrollment in one field, you have someone that's able to move into another field. And often you get classes that are taught by, as the call pointed out, by more than one professor. I don't think we object to these out of hand. I think what's happened, though, when you hire more and more people in these interdisciplinary studies types of arrangements, you tend to water down the number of faculty who are really experts in a particular field, and it could have an effect on the educational offerings and educational quality that a university like UIUC is trying to get. But the trend towards interdisciplinary faculty is very strong at UIUC and around the country.
All right. Again, I thank the caller. We'll go to somebody next in Edgar County, line three. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
One of the gold mines of universities is graduate students and adjunct professors, of which I dealt with both in my education. and then afterwards. And universities really do quite well with that.
Well, as I was saying before, this is the trend. At UIUC, we've seen a large decline in the number of full-time faculty and a large increase in the number of adjunct professors. And you always have to be careful. Adjunct professors are just tremendous people. They're incredibly dedicated, but they can't give the time and the time and effort that's really required for a lot of students in terms of mentoring, advising, counseling, working on their research, keeping current in their field, that a full-time tenured faculty member would be able to do. And in terms of the gold mine, it's just cost. Universities look at the situation. Well, we see at UIUC, we've seen a 25% decline in the number of assistant professors. That's new professors, about 125 number decline in the last 5 years. So what happens is a professor retires or a professor moves on, and the line is not filled. The classes still have to be taught because enrollment is up. So the university will hire a couple, two or three adjunct professors instead of filling the full-time professor line. It's more cost-effective in the short run, but it does have an effect on the overall fabric of the university in terms of new assistant professors bring new ideas, research, they bring enthusiasm. They really are the lifeblood of the university. And I think if you ask me what was most disappointing about my findings at UIUC, I would point to the significant decline in the number of assistant professors over the last several years.
Yes, but don't you also think that adjunct professors can bring their real-life experience into their classroom? I taught in New York at Pace and at New York University, and the situation was that was why I was hired, so I could give them the on-the-ground experience and also could help place them into internships and such. That was another focus that they liked. But yet at the same time, you really just kind of have to love teaching in order to be an adjunct professor.
There's no doubt that adjuncts have a place. There's absolutely no doubt. I teach accounting, and all business programs use real professional accountants in the field to teach certain classes for the reasons you stated. And there absolutely is a role for adjunct professors in almost all disciplines. The connection to the employment world is obviously a tremendous advantage. But the issue is to what degree. The issue is to what degree you're only going to have adjuncts teaching as opposed to full-time faculty. And the pendulum, I think, has shifted too much away from full-time faculty and towards adjunct professors. But there certainly is a role for adjunct professors in almost every department. Certainly in the College of Business where I teach, there's a definitive positive role that many adjuncts have and will always have.
We just have a couple of minutes again. I want to thank the caller. Hope you'll forgive me for wanting to get one more. And that's somebody who is listening here in Urbana, and it's line number 2 right here. Hello.
Yeah, I didn't get to listen until very late, so I don't know if you covered this, but I was just curious if you had any thoughts about the displacement of state citizens, students, by foreign students who are paying higher tuition, et cetera.
Well, I did not cover it, but I certainly noticed it at UIUC. What we've noticed at UIUC is that the increase in diversity at UIUC has been almost all been due to the increase in foreign students. And foreign students bring a tremendous perspective. They bring their world experiences to the campus, and they certainly enhance the campus environment. The issue is, should that come at the expense of state students? And this is a problem that we see at all the flagship universities, UIUC being the flagship university in the state. They get to charge out-of-state citizens and foreign students anywhere from 2 to 3 times more than they charge an Illinois resident. So there's a strong incentive to admit more out-of-state or foreign students just from a purely financial perspective. And this is the legislature has certainly noticed this. And the state legislature in Illinois going forward, starting in 2013, right now they're developing metrics that they're going to start tying that state appropriation to? And one of these metrics is going to be the number of Illinois residents who are getting degrees at UIUC, a potential metric. And so the issue the caller brings up is something that is certainly going to be at the forefront of a lot of discussion at UIUC moving forward.
Thanks.
All right, thank you. We have maybe about a minute or so left. Maybe I'll just ask one last question that did indeed come in as an email and from someone who's asking, if too much money is being spent on the administration, then how do you get the administration at universities to cut themselves?
That's an excellent point. I firmly believe the best way to do that is through the collective bargaining process, where there's real pressure on the administration, and contractual pressure on the administration that you bring to them. I think just through education, just through pointing out, look, let's get back to the mission. Let's do the following. Let's create some metrics on the percentage of the total budget going to instruction and research. Look at that over time and make sure we're being true to the core mission. So whether it's a collective bargaining environment or not, let's create some metrics that really point to whether the administration is committed to the core academic mission and use those as a benchmark moving forward.
Well, at that point, I think we'll have to finish up for this hour with the promise that I'm sure we'll be getting back to issues like this in the future. For the moment, we'll have to say thanks to our guest, Howard Bunces. He is a professor of accounting at the University of Eastern Michigan. He's an attorney and a certified public accountant. Thanks very much, Professor Bunces, for giving us some of your time today.
I appreciate it. I think I had a wonderful time. The calls were excellent, and I really appreciate you taking the time to speak with me.
All right.